What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
The Mets are honoring the Beatles concert at Shea Stadium. They're giving away a Shea Stadium replica of the Beatles and all that. It's also the one-year anniversary of another thing from last year. It's the one-year anniversary of Hawktua.
Oh, really?
Yep. August 15th, 2024 was the controversial Hawktua game.
Oh, so this could be a Hawktria game.
As you recall, Haley Welsh threw out the first pitch, much to the controversy. And then the Mets blew the game. They had a big lead against the A's, and they threw it all away. So
the Mets, like, reverse grimaced her because she pretty much went away for a while after that.
Hawktua, Lukey!
And luckily, it didn't derail the season the way I think some feared. Like, this was going to take the beauty of what was going on. It was going to ruin the OMG, the grimace. And even though they blew the game against the A's, they had a big lead. They spit it up. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
They recovered, and everything was okay. So I don't know what that means, other than it's the one-year anniversary of that as the Mets bring in Beatle Night.
Mm.
So, there you go. What?
Nothing.
All just, right.
Do you like Helter Skelter? Came into it. It's great.
What? Yeah,
he led you in with a Beatles song, and then you did the Beatles stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, one thing I learned this from my program director at XM Radio 25 years ago. I learned a few lessons when I was learning radio at XM with five listeners.
Yes.
Great host, the great program director. His name is Kevin Straley. I hope he's still out there because the guy was amazing. And one of the lessons he taught me is never look back when you're doing a radio show. You don't have to refer to the music when it comes back. Just let it play. If people get it, great. If they don't, no big deal.
Right.
Don't stop the show. So I follow that because of Kevin. And so I apologize. If you wanted me to reference that, I rarely do because it was one of my early radio lessons.
I just try to get us off a pretty good-looking woman hawking on junk. That's all.
What? Excuse me?
Hawktua, isn't that what that is?
I was talking about a baseball game the Mets lost.
Oh, you're talking about the game.
Yeah.
Nobody heard about the game.
Yeah.
Nothing you said after Hawktua, nobody heard.
I'm sure. Now, before we get back to your phone calls, I am curious if this is bothering you, Teak, or you, Sean. And that is what has occurred over the last week without much public fanfare. And that is the fact that Aaron Boone, the manager of the New York Yankees, has proceeded to take out a shovel and bury Jason Dominguez.
Mm.
Jason Dominguez appeared as a pinch runner in Wednesday's game. Okay?
Cool. For Giancarlo Stanton.
For Giancarlo Stanton. He did not play at all in the rest of the Minnesota series. And we only saw him once start a game in the Houston series. So in the last week, he's essentially only started one game.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't hit much, but he's also only had six at-bats in the last 10 days.
Right.
Are we okay with this? Because, hey, best team on the field possible. We're trying to win games. Or is this something that's a little troublesome?
I have a take on it, but Sean.
All right, here's where I lay on this. I've stated this over and over again, and I think it's the truth. The Yankees had two jobs this year. Number one, get to a World Series against the Jugate last year. Number two, properly develop Jason Dominguez. If they fail to make the playoffs while trying to win every game while also not playing Jason Dominguez as much as possible, they have failed this season beyond belief, because I do think that's really important. They're not playing Jason Dominguez right now because they don't trust his defense, and Giancarlo doesn't cover enough ground in right. That is what. They're not burying him because of his play. They're burying him because of the combo of the two corner outfields. So I understand that, and I grasp that. But you're biting your nose to spite your face. This is very important growth time for Jason Dominguez for the future of this team if they don't plan on spending a lot of money on this team as well.
Right.
And they are allowing that to get in the way of this. So I understand why they're doing it, but it could come back to haunt them.
I think the former of what Sean said is preventing the latter of what Sean said. So the former being this team's got to make the playoffs and try to get back to a World Series. The latter is now not as important because they don't trust them. And when you get tight like this, it's just natural. You're going to go with someone who you believe it more in.
Right.
And you believe in veterans. We saw this with the Mets a couple of years ago with the Scherzer-Verlander thing. They didn't like they could have went young. Instead, they went extra old. Why? Because Steve Cohen wanted to win a championship in the first 5 years, whatever heck he stated when he first bought the team. And he believed that veterans, even if they were compromised veterans, were more likely to do it than young prospects. And so what's happening with the Yankees right now, at least I think this is the case, is that Aaron Boone and Cashman or whoever's making the decisions are getting tight on young players being able to play because they don't trust them. They trust vets.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't trust the young guys.
Well, the complicated part to this, which is basically what you're saying, I'm just going to phrase it a little bit differently because I agree overall, is that Aaron Boone is putting out there the lineup that gives him the best chance to win on a daily basis, as he should, with only 45 games to go. And as of right now, Jason Dominguez isn't a part of that.
Agreed.
And he's not wrong, because Trent Grisham has had a wonderful season.
Right. I'm not upset with this, by the way.
No, it's more of a mixed bag because, like Sean said, you want to develop Jason Dominguez. You want to give him a chance to play.
Right.
And it's very difficult for him to succeed if he's not getting that opportunity right now. But we're also in nut time, or whatever you want to call it.
Cutting.
Yeah, I just don't want to put them together.
So I did it for you. We're good.
Thank you. Right. So Trent Grisham is your best option in center. Cody Bellinger is your best option in left.
Right.
As of now, Giancarlo is your best option in right.
Because you need his bat.
The only thing you could argue right now, and you brought this up the other day, even though Boone hasn't done it, is Cody Bellinger playing first base, which he hasn't done. He's done very little of this season.
But I think they're not doing that because they don't trust those two being their corner outfielders and don't want to lose a game where it's Trent Grisham running all over the place.
It's not the greatest outfield, but you do have a really good center fielder in Trent Grisham, and you do have the ability late in a game to change that.
Yes.
Like, you're taking Stanton out late for defense. So it's not something you have to live with for the entire game. And right now, if you're looking to put your best offensive team on the field, I'll make this simple. Who would you rather see in the lineup every day, Jason Dominguez or Austin Wells?
Jason Dominguez.
Dominguez.
That's who would lose time. Because with Paul Goldschmidt out, you play Bellinger at first base, Dominguez in left, Ben Rice catches, and Austin Wells on the bench. And there you go. But right now, there's been a hesitation from Aaron Boone to play Cody Bellinger at first base. Just haven't seen a lot of it.
Yeah. And look, though, this also goes back to last year when we talked about Tanner Scott and all these guys. The Yankees, this won't be the first time. If they end up not properly developing Jason Dominguez, you want to insert a Miguel Andujar or a Clint Frazier here. They have got Gio Urshela obviously playing for Andujar when he came back. The Yankees, and many times during the Brian Cashman era, have these big plans for prospects, and then come these late seasons, they don't allow them to play because they're always in contention and don't want to do that. So, you know what? If you're not going to make a deal to trade these guys and help the team actually win a World Series, then when the time comes, they better be playing and developing. It's like counterproductive.
Well, you can't serve both of those masters. That's the challenge. And well, if the Yankees, because we're talking about them, if the Yankees were still winning and they just 65% win percentage, it almost doesn't matter.
Right.
So you can throw the young kid in there, even though it's down the stretch, and it doesn't feel like it's hampering your plan to get to the postseason or go deep into the postseason. But right now, because of what's happened over the last month, you're feeling desperate, and you're managing and drawing up these lineups with a little bit of desperation to win, because you don't do it consistently.
No.
It doesn't feel easy. It doesn't just happen because you're the Yankees. And so you got to trust the veterans as opposed to the young guys.
888-808-1019. We'll check in on the Yankee lineup when it gets posted. They're in St. Louis tonight, 8:15 first pitch. You'll hear the pregame show right here on The Fan a little after 7:30. Mario is in Long Beach. What's shaking, Mario?
What's going on? Great show as always, guys.
Appreciate it.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Listen, I got one thing to say.
Yeah.
We were talking about disciplining players, and I think what we need to have now, because the problem we have is you got a player, anybody, it's Soto, anybody else, that makes 10 times more than the manager, guaranteed contract. So if he doesn't want to listen, what's going to happen to him? You know, so now look back what happened to Nick Castellanos. You know what happened to him in June?
Yeah, that's when they took him out for defense. He got pissed off, and Rob Thompson benched him the next day.
Right.
Yeah, and he makes a lot of money. So he's like $20 million or whatever he makes. And here's another thing before you let me go. He was on a 237-game streak of playing games. Well, broke his streak.
Yeah, but Mario, so a couple of things I want to address on this. Nick Castellanos did something disrespectful to the manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so the manager, Rob Thompson, rightfully so, said, hey, you can't say that to me. I'm going to bench you.
Right.
We have not heard of any Met or Yankee doing something disrespectful to the manager that warrants a benching.
Agreed.
It's not the same as you made an error, you're not playing well, I'm going to call you out. It's completely different. So I'll give you something that's more comparable. And I want to thank Dan, who is like the executive producer of this show because he sends us so much great stuff.
All right.
Dave Martinez, World Series winning manager of the Washington Nationals, had a press conference on June 14th in which he said, quote, it's never on the coaching. Coaches work their asses off every single day. We're not going to point fingers and say it's on the coaches. Sometimes you got to put the onus on the players.
Mm-hmm.
It took Dave Martinez 3 more weeks before his ass was fired. The moment Dave Martinez did that, he was done.
Right.
And that's a World Series winning manager. That's not something Aaron Boone's accomplished yet or Carlos Mendoza's accomplished. I know the Nats are rebuilding. I get that. He's a World Series manager. So for all of us that want that, we want that rant, Dave Martinez gave it to you, and clearly it didn't work because the team, A, didn't respond. And they went on a 10-game losing streak.
Well, that's the thing. It's that these guys aren't going to respond necessarily. It's really hard when there's not the threat of losing your employment. And baseball players, at least some of these veterans who we're talking about, not the young kids, but some of these veterans,
right?
They got guaranteed contracts. They're going to be fine. They're going to have a job. It's really hard to threaten them. And so you got to find other ways to motivate them. That's the real challenge for baseball managers, is how do you motivate guys when they're going through emotional or mental slump, whatever it is that's causing them not to perform. How do you motivate them?
Yeah, and everybody's different.
It's not with playing time. No. You can do that in the NFL because you're not really guaranteed. Your contracts are kind of at will. It's like, whatever, I'll replace you because that person gives me a better chance to win today, and if he does it too many times, you're going to be out of here.
Right.
It doesn't work necessarily that way in baseball.
So yeah.
It's just different.
And like, this is sort of related. I'll throw it at you. I have been saying a lot on the radio and certainly on the Rico for a while that Juan Soto should lead off for the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes sense. He is so great at getting on base. He's now added to his repertoire stealing bases.
Right.
And so if he's up with less guys on base, that's not really a bad thing.
No.
Considering he's so good.
Has he been caught stealing?
This season?
Yeah, I don't think.
That's impressive.
I think I heard that last night.
He, just like everyone else, are on these incredible streaks where the Mets haven't been caught stealing in 38 consecutive attempts.
Yep.
But so far this season, he has one caught stealing, to your point.
Right.
He is 19 for 20, and 19 is a career high. The most stolen bases he's ever had in a season is 12. And so he's already destroyed that. And he's well on his way to
2020. He's going 2020.
Absolutely. I mean, he could go 30-30 at this point. Like, that's on the table. So I want Juan Soto to lead off, and we could debate it all day, but I said it to Carlos Mendoza when I had him on the Rico. I said, hey, this is what I would do. And he laughed, because obviously I'm an idiot. What do I know? And this has gained steam with a lot of Met fans. Like, yeah, you know, it's actually a good point. Why not lead off Juan Soto? And the theory a lot of us have is that Juan Soto doesn't want to lead off. And so I wrestle between these two thoughts because, yes, you're a worker, and yes, you make a lot of money and should do whatever the manager says, but you also want, and this is why I bring this up, the player to be in the best position to succeed.
Yeah.
And if it's not something he'd be comfortable with and you're not going to maximize him in that spot, then why force him?
Right. But what do you, in his mind, what's he missing out on? RBI opportunities?
Yes.
I mean, he doesn't... So this is the challenge for Mendoza.
Just say it.
It's
you know what you want to say?
Hey, Juan, you're not really hitting with runners in scoring position anyway. So,
and you can't say that, though.
You can't say it, but
Juan Solo.
You should be able to say that and say, do what's best for the team. Let's lead you off, get you on base, and then let whoever, Lindor or Alonso or Nimmo, whoever, to be able to drive you in. You'll steal second. You're gonna steal 30 bases this year, right? You're gonna set a career high. You're gonna revolutionize the back of your baseball card. But do it for the team.
Yeah.
And it's hard to have that conversation because of the egos of athletes. Even if they're not expressly cocky, every athlete has that, has an ego like that. So it's hard to accept that critical or constructive criticism.
Yeah, you can't say to a guy who's been successful his entire career hitting with runners in scoring position, hey, you suck at it. Yeah. That's why we're going to do this. And I was looking up Juan Soto's career with runners in scoring position. So as you guys remember, Yankee fans, do you know what he hit last year with runners in scoring position?
I don't.
345.
I was going to say it was over 300.
Yeah, we knew he was clutch.
But, it was ridiculously clutch. He actually had not the best season of his career with runners in scoring position, but it was up there. 345 with a 1,143 OPS. The year before that with San Diego, also amazing. Over 1,000 OPS, he hit 299. Throughout his career, he's been a clutch hitter. Listen to his numbers in 2021. They're absurd. 396 with runners in scoring position. 1,265 OPS. 2020 was a shortened season. I acknowledge that. 421 with a 1,374 OPS. So we know he's clutch, but I skipped the season, and I wanted to skip it on purpose to show you something. There's one year in his career besides this where he was a failure with runners in scoring position. The year he was traded to the San Diego Padres.
Yeah.
204, 723 OPS. This season, 188, 700 OPS. So almost the same numbers.
Yeah, maybe it's the newness.
But it didn't affect him with the Yankees. Good for you guys. But clearly in San Diego and now here with the Mets, we've seen a different Juan Soto. Now, locally, the following year in San Diego, he was back to being great, which is why I have a confidence that this isn't a long-term thing, but for the right now, it's a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem. And there's not really anything you can do if he doesn't want to move. And again, I don't know if Mindy's had this conversation or David Stearns or anyone has had this conversation with him. But I think it'd be a hard conversation to have. It's just hard. Tell great players that, we believe in you, but do this for the team.
Juan Soto, by the way, in his career has led off as a starter twice. Once in 2018 and once in 2021. So he's only done it twice, and it was a long time ago.
Do you want an update to Rico Bronya?
What does that mean?
I know. What are you talking about?
Rico Bronya is in the news right now for the New York Mets.
The real Rico Bronya?
The real Rico Bronya.
Not your podcast?
Rico Bronya's vintage number 26 is being handed out again by the New York Mets.
Oh, it's going to Nolan McClain?
Nolan McClain will wear 26.
Rico Bronya's in the news. You're so funny. You have me concerned for a
second. I know. I'm like, wait, did he die or something?
Dude, if you announced like Rico was sick that way, I'd hate you forever.
I wouldn't do that. But you look, if Nolan McClain goes and has a good career, he'll be more remembered for wearing that number than Rico Bronya.
Well, I'll tell you something funny about the number 26. If you go through the history of the New York Mets and you say, who wore 26? It is a laundry list of crap. Like, the best player besides Rico, my guy, to wear 26 is Dave Kingman, who wasn't beloved by all Mets fans, but remember, he had the home run record that Darryl broke.
Yep.
Here are the last five guys to wear 26. You ready?
Let's hear them.
Once a Yankee, always a Yankee, Pablo Reyes. Former speed skater, Eddie Alvarez. Once a Yankee, always a Yankee, Tim LoCastro. Khalil Lee, Robinson Chirinos, Kevin Plawecki, failed prospect Fernando Martinez, El Duque.
Oh, that's a good one.
Billy Taylor, who's been in my head a lot lately because he stinks. Yeah, I mean, Rico Bronya is the best number 26 the Mets have had in the last 30 years.
Until tomorrow.
I'm not mad about that.
So there you go. That's weird for a number like that in baseball, 26, to have that many bad players wear it for an organization.
Besides Rico Bronya.
Of course.
Yes. I mean, I'm looking down, like, Frank Viola wore it for a year. Dave Kingman's the best. Like, if I'm ranking the best 26s in Met history,
well,
it's Dave Kingman and Rico Bronya.
You know what?
And it ain't close.
You know what's cool about this, Evan?
What?
You have the opportunity to do something really cool in your life.
What's that?
You have a Rico Bronya jersey. I think you should get your dad a Dave Kingman jersey. And I think you get a young Jet, a Nolan McClain jersey.
So we all wear 26s?
All wear the generational 26s in a
photo.
That's
a great idea.
It's actually not a bad idea.
That is a phenomenal idea.
I don't know how my dad feels about Dave Kingman. Dave Kingman was one of those guys where he was a one-dimensional player, hit a ton of home runs, did nothing, low average, high strikeouts, which means he would have fit very well in 2025.
Wasn't he bristly?
Very bristly. Very, very bristly. And I don't know if he was beloved. He was also kind of on a lot of bad Met teams.
All right,
so he's not associated with, I'm just saying, I don't know if my dad would be like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to wear Dave Kingman.
I just think he'd tell your dad, listen, this is your generation's 26. Could we just make the photo happen? I mean, let's be honest.
Right. Evan, one more thing on the 26 thing.
Who just spoke?
Rosie. I apologize.
Oh, God, you didn't even sound like you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you looking at this? Mickey Callaway apparently wore 26 for 5 days in 2019. Do you recall this?
No.
You don't?
No.
Okay. I was hoping you said yes, and you can explain to me why Mickey Callaway wore 26 for 5 days in 2019.
I'll tell you this. You think I know a lot about the Mets?
Yes.
I'm trying to think of manager numbers. I obviously know Casey and Gill because they're retired. Like, that's obvious, right?
I can't even think of Mendoza's.
I think it's in the 50s.
No, it's in the 60s.
Oh, is it? 64, I think.
Yeah. Bobby V was 2.
Mm-hmm.
Davey was 5, because I know that Joe's talked about they should retire Davey's number with David Wright. Terry Collins? Hold on, don't tell me. I'm going to say a low number because he's so, like,
12.
Small. You going 12?
I don't know. I'm just totally guessing.
It's not 3 because Granderson wore 3. I honestly, I have no idea.
10.
Mm. Yeah.
Terry Collins was 10.
Yeah, now I see it. Yeah. What number is Aaron Boone? Does anybody know?
I forgot. I think it's in the high 20s.
We watch the guy every day. What is it?
Well, because remember, he's always wearing the pullover. You never see the uniform.
Wait,
number.
Didn't he pick the number for the next Yankee championship?
That was Girardi multiple times, and then he changed it after 09.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I forgot. Anthony's down in Tampa. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, Ant.
Hey, gentlemen. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure, man. What's up, dude?
Not much. So I don't know if you saw Fangraphs came out with a thing where they said that Mets have a 74.9% chance of making the playoffs. But I actually did the math. And, you know, with parity, they say that all teams are created equal. But if you look at the Mets and you look at all the rest of the teams in the NL, you can see that that statement simply isn't true. Normally, you'd have a 50-50 chance at best at winning, but the Mets are not normal. So the Phillies actually have a 25% chance at best, and then you add the Reds to the mix, and the chances of winning drastically go down. So the three-way wildcard race, the Phillies have a 33 1/3 chance of winning, but the Mets have a 66% chance of winning, and Cincinnati knows that they can't beat us, so they're not even going to try. So if you take Philadelphia's 33 1/3 chance minus the 25% chance, and you add it to 8 1/3,
right,
it actually comes out to a 141 2/3% chance of Mets winning the National League.
That's creative math, man. I love it.
Now, that was, of course, in honor of one of the great wrestling promos of all time, the great Scott Steiner. While I think he was in TNA, he was not in WCW or the WWE. Did this whole promo about math that, to me, is still one of the funniest wrestling promos of all time.
Yeah, I think we played this like 2 months ago.
I was telling Rosie to pull it up real quick so at least people in the audience can get context to Anthony's wonderful Met promo on why they actually have a 118% chance of making the playoffs. You know, those Fangraph percentages, they drive me nuts. I get why they're there, but it just doesn't mean anything.
No.
Like, you watch
how are they calculating?
I think they calculate
like the percentage of winning each game for the next whatever, and you got to compare it to the other team's percentage of winning each game for the next 40. It doesn't make any sense.
No, and here's the key to this whole thing. The key to this whole thing to me, and I know the Yankees are playing the Cardinals tonight, and they're still kind of in it, and the Giants are kind of in it. The Reds look like the real threat. What are the Reds? Like, are they going to finish this season 10 games above 500? I mean, they just won 2 out of 3 against the Phillies, which was impressive. They did split against the Pirates, which wasn't. They did lose 2 out of 3 to Atlanta, which wasn't. I don't know. Anyhow, here's the famous Scott Steiner math promo.
You know, they say all men are created equal, but you look at me and you look at Small Joe, and you can see that statement is not true.
Right.
See, normally if you go one-on-one with another wrestler, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But I'm a genetic freak, and I'm not normal. So you got a 25% at best at beating me. And then you add Kurt Angle to the mix, your chances of winning drastically go down. See, the three-way at sacrifice, you got a 33 1/3 chance of winning. But I got a 66 2/3 chance of winning because Kurt Angle knows he can't beat me and he's not even going to try. So, Samoa Joe, you take your 33 1/3 chance minus my 25% chance and you got an 8 1/3 chance of winning at sacrifice. But then you take my 75% chance of winning if we used to go one-on-one and then add 66 2/3%, I got 141 2/3 chance of winning at sacrifice. See, Joe, the numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster for you at Sacrifice.
I just realized that our caller, I think, did it verbatim.
Exactly. He did it exactly.
Because when he said the Reds know they can't beat us, which obviously is not true. They won 2 out of 3 against the Mets. I was like, oh, I get that. He did the exact promo. That's a great job by him.
Well done.
Well done, sir. We'll come back with more of your calls at 888-808-1019. We'll check in on Mendy's lineup. It's Friday here in New York City. Mets are at home trying to get a win against the Seattle Mariners, and the Yankees are playing interleague in St. Louis against the Cardinals. I wonder if any Yankee fan made the trip. That is a cool stadium. It's a cool city. I would advise you that if you're in St. Louis, go to the Arch. The Arch is awesome. It's not that far away from the stadium, but you don't have to go up the Arch. Have you gone up the Arch?
Yes. It's kind of anticlimactic.
It's not only anticlimactic because you get up there, there isn't a lot of room, and great, you get to see St. Louis. Okay, mm-hmm. Fantastic. But you go up in this very small, tight, like, elevator.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable because it's like 10 minutes, and what are you talking about? And it's mm-hmm. small, and it's sweaty, and it's just...
Right.
The juice isn't worth the squeeze,
right.
as they
we
say.
Did the Statue of Liberty last weekend.
How was that?
So you have to walk it. You don't have to walk it. You can walk to the pedestal, and then you have to walk to the top if you want to get to the top. And it is tight, and it's a spiral, like a tight spiral.
Mm. Oh, that would make me nauseous.
I mean, Sean, you might. I mean, I'm not even joking.
No, you could say I won't fit. That's fine.
You'd have trouble fitting. I'm not even joking, dude. Like Tracy's dad, Ernie wouldn't do it. He didn't do it.
Right.
He had tickets to go, but he didn't do it because it's like, and the steps are like.
Well, think about what it was built for. It's like the riding a cyclone in Coney Island. Not built for people this day and age.
And then when you get up there, it's a platform about the size of, not even, it's this desk.
Maybe. He's fat!
Maybe this desk.
Damn.
And then you look out these little dusty, tiny windows, and it's like, dude, was this worth it?
Yeah. I have no interest in doing that, so knowing that I could use fat as an excuse, right. Tiki, you've sold me.
Right.
And what kind of picture can you even take?
The picture sucked.
Yeah, because you're trying to
absolutely
take it.
Absolutely sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of landmarks, and it's cool to visit them.
Wait, can I just stop you? Where's the elevator at the Arch? Because when you look at the Arch, it's just an arch.
So, all right, I'm going to try to describe this because it's been a while. So you go in kind of underground,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's this huge museum kind of honoring Lewis and Clark mm-hmm. and talking about going west. And it's really cool. Like, there's a movie in there. There's artifacts. Like, it's a great museum. So you're sort of underground. Then you go to the side, I guess where the Arch actually is. And it's not even really an elevator. It's almost like a ride that you go on where you sit down. It's very tight.
Right.
Which is
why
people.
It's awkward. It's just, yeah. It's just weird.
Yeah. And when I went by myself. Like I did a road trip all by myself, me and Dudley. Okay. And obviously he wasn't going up the Arch. He's a dog for those that aren't aware.
What'd you do? Leave him in the car?
No. A hotel.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. Dog friendly hotels. They hook you up, man.
By the way, there's a lot of them now.
Tons of them. I used to have an app that would tell me dog-friendly hotels or not. So he would have a great time in the hotel. I gave him the run of the town.
Right.
So I went up there by myself, and I was with like 3 random people. And it was just like, what are we supposed to talk about here?
Hey, where are you guys from? What do you like? I like baseball.
I'm here to see the Cardinals play.
I score
Why
games.
Are you out in public canoodling?
And so then you go to the top, and it's the same thing. Like, it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So the Statue of Liberty, which is funny, like most people listening here, I guarantee we're New Yorkers, we're New Jerseyers, most of us have not been to the Statue of Liberty.
And again, I've been here forever.
Right, no.
I mean, you've been here for obviously for your entire life, but I've lived here for a lot of years. We just never have done it.
Most people don't. I'm telling you, these things like the Arch in St. Louis, mm-hmm. like the Statue of Liberty, like the Empire State Building, most of it is done by tourists.
Right.
So that's why I say when you go to St. Louis as a tourist, whether it's to see the Yankees or why else would you go, go to the museum. The museum is great. I had a great time at the Arch,
mm-hmm.
but going up the Arch, not worth it.
Yeah. I mean, the Rams aren't even there, so why else? Yeah. It's just baseball.
You're that's it.
That's a tough spot. Game, Arch, done for the day? Like, what do you do there?
I went there. I biked around the town. Nice town.
It's funny. I ran around the town.
You ran, I biked.
It was nice. It's town nice. Is actually nice.
Well, did I tell you the prank they pulled on me in St. Louis?
No.
Have I ever told you about this?
Was this the cops calling you?
With their bike.
Yes,
you did tell us.
Yeah, this happened in St. Louis. I biked to the stadium and I, you know, locked my bike up, like no big deal. But I didn't realize that it was in a pole that doesn't extend up. So you can just lift the bike out. So these police officers stole my bike, moved it to a different pole and then laughed at me when I went to the pole looking for my bike. And they're like, oh, hey, guy, come over here. We have it. It was funny, but I was like, oh, my God, I lost my bike. Very nice people in St. Louis.
You can also go to the, Chess Hall of Fame, the World Chess Hall of Fame.
That's in St. Louis?
Yeah.
I didn't go to that. The Cardinals have their Baseball Hall of Fame top-notch. Mm. They have such a great baseball history.
Right.
That one was cool. Plus the ballpark, the surrounding area was cool.
And I'm guessing the Blues have, for the hockey fan, the Blues, I'm sure, have something as well.
Oh, that's right. They have a hockey team in St. Louis.
Oh, come on.
Even I forget that.
Honestly.
Like Blues. What are you talking about?
Yeah, the Blues. Like singing the Blues? Let's go to Tom in Clark, New Jersey. Hey, Tom.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
What's up? Hello, Tommy. Tommy going once.
I think Tommy's phone is jacked.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold. I always feel bad because people wait on hold a long time. So I'll put you on hold. If it ever clears up, we'll go back to you. Alexis is calling from Harlem. What's up, Alexis? That's another bad phone. I'll put you on hold, too. Like, we're being very kind today.
Right.
Let's go to Mickey in Sturbridge, Massachusetts. What's up, Mickey?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure. What's up, dude?
I wanted to talk about Jason Dominguez. I got 2 points. The second one is about his batting, and I hope I can get that in. But the first thing is, you know, the media and the Yankees built this guy up so high that they made all the Yankees' expectations go through the roof. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole thing, the five-tool player, the nickname. And the thing that disappoints me is if he's supposed to be that good, I don't care if he was a left fielder, a center fielder, or a right fielder. When you take an exceptional player and switch his position in the outfield, you want to at least see steady improvement, which we have not seen. The guy's a disaster out there. I don't care how many errors they've given him because he could probably have 10 more on balls he never touched.
Right.
So that's my first point. The second thing is with his batting. 2 weeks ago, I believe, I looked at what his batting average was right-handed. Now, granted, I think it's probably about 70 at-bats right now, because when I checked, it was in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And he was hitting 109. I don't think that's changed much. Did anybody ever consider letting him try hitting lefty against lefties?
Yeah,
could he do any worse?
I'll give you a couple of answers on this. He's hitting 198 against left-handed pitching, batting right-handed, OPS of 560. When batting lefty against righties, 274, 778. There's a clear difference, and there's been a clear difference throughout his minor league career. This is always very challenging with a young player. When do you say this isn't working?
Right.
Because it is a great attribute to have, being a switch hitter, especially when you're productive from both sides, the way Francisco Lindor is, the way Ozzy Albies is. Right. I mean, it's okay to have a stronger side. Like, guys tend to have a stronger side, but you need to be productive on both. I don't know if we're there yet. He is still an incredibly young player, and I think we forget that. He's only 22 years old, and I do think he's 22 years old. I think that because he's been in the system for a long time and we've heard so much about him, you almost feel like, oh, he's been around forever.
You feel like you know him. It's almost like a Volpe. It's the same. It was the same way. You just you heard about him for years, and then eventually he gets up, and you expect him to be this polished, you know, soon to be great MLB player, but he hasn't gone through the process yet.
Yeah.
Of being an MLB player, and so it's not as I think talked about as the Volpe situation, but it's exactly the same. The difference is Volpe got to play every day.
Well, there's a few differences. Number one, playing every day. And number two, the switch hitting question, because it is a tough one. Like, I can't dismiss that at some point you say, hey, scrap him batting right-handed. In fact, I'll give you an example. He's a newer New York Met, but we know Cedric Mullins is a left-hand hitting center fielder, right? We all know that.
Right.
What if I told you he was a switch hitter? He was. Cedric Mullins.
Did not know that.
Was a switch hitter. And he had 111 plate appearances at the major league level. Batting right-handed. So based on that, I would assume he did it for the first year or two of his major league career. Here is numbers. 147 batting average, 439 OPS. And so Mullins eventually said, screw it. And so now he bats lefties against lefties. And here's the great part about it, especially this season. He's hit lefties as good as he's hit righties.
Right, so he was wasting his time trying to hit righty.
Now, but when does a player do that? I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. When but do you give
not,
up on
he's
that?
Also not young. So when did he stop?
Well, Cedric
how old,
like, is...
How old was he when he stopped?
Cedric is 30, so if you assume he stopped, let's say, 3 years into his career, he's probably about 25, 26.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess.
All right, so if we're using him as the model, then Dominguez has got another year or two before he has to make that kind of decision.
I don't think it's a have to make the decision. I think that the Yankees and Dominguez and his coaching staff, they got to get together and just look long-term what's better for this kid.
Well, and again, if he's not, and they have to ask him. You have to have the conversation with them. Are you comfortable doing this? If not, let's work on just being solely one-sided.
And you know what's so funny about this conversation? So Ricky Ricardo, who does a great job, Yankee play-by-play in Espanol. He's also the Eagle announcer. He's got a big Super Bowl ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was telling me about a segment he heard about today on MLB Network in which Al Leiter and Ron Darling were discussing the differences in 2025 of the advantage that right-hand hitters have against lefty pitching and lefty pitching versus righty pitching. And one of the points that was made is that righties used to have a bigger edge against left-handed pitching, but lefties have kind of altered because everyone's going to try to hit fly balls.
Right.
And so they're trying to uppercut everything. And so lefties are throwing a lot more sweepers low and away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we've actually seen more success from left-handed pitching against right-handed batting. Now, if that's the case and it's trending where there isn't as big of an edge being a right-hand hitter versus a left-hand pitcher, that's even more of a reason for Dominguez to say, what kind of edge am I really getting from being a righty?
Yeah.
So maybe I stick with my better side.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's also not going to get better from the other side if they don't allow him to hit from the other side.
Right.
So that they kind of make the decision for him.
It's part of the problem, yeah. I mean, it's part of the problem where...
That's the great point.
How do you get better if you don't get opportunities?
Yeah.
Well, we've always said that, too, about lefties that don't face lefties. How are you going to get better at hitting left-handed pitching if you never face left-handed pitching?
See, there's only one way to get better at something, to do it.
1,000%, but at what cost? Because you're trying to win games at the major league level. That's the trade-off.
Yeah. I mean, this is the problem the Yankees continue to find themselves in.
Matt is in Mayapak. What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's going on?
I initially called in about the Juan Soto leadoff comment, right? So I just have a question after I make my point. I feel like that's never been exercised. I'm a Yankee fan, by the way, but I just don't understand why managers don't want to switch something up when a guy is doing something productive when there's nobody on base for him. You know, he has all these home runs and he's hitting them solo, but then, you know, it seems like the manager's just not switching up for him. So my question is, why do managers tend to, you know, the game hasn't changed. It's always been mental. But why do managers tend to go away from, you know, a gut decision or the feel of the game? And it's all analytical now. I feel like it's so analytical.
Right.
You know? So I'll just hang up a little bit. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I mean, the analytics part is it's been a long time since this has been taken over baseball. And there's some merit to it.
Well, if the information tells you something, why wouldn't you listen to it?
Exactly. And so you can't completely ignore it, obviously, but sometimes there is that gut. And you have to, and this is on managers trusting players. And so if something's missing from the old school way of doing things, it's that.
Well, I also think we now have gotten lazy, all of us, where when there's a move we don't like, we just say analytics. So I'm going to get specific with you. The other night, when Carlos Mendoza allowed Clay Holmes to remain in a game against Matt Olson, and he had Gregory Soto warming up in the bullpen, and Matt Olson was 1-for-10 or 1-for-11 in his career against Gregory Soto, the analytics, the numbers, the information told you to go to Gregory Soto. He didn't.
Yeah.
Now, maybe I'm the analytical nerd, but that's the better matchup. He didn't do it. Why he didn't do it? I don't know. And then even last night, the decision to take Kodai Senga out wasn't analytical. It was probably what Tiki said earlier and what I even said earlier, which is he looked at Kodai Senga and felt, again, gut feeling, He's done.
Yeah.
It wasn't 92 pitches. Like, oh, that's the number. I got to take him out. I think a part of it was I just saw him fall behind Michael Harris, give up a base hit. Mm-hmm. He's grunting and going nuts on every pitch. He's going max effort. I think he's done. That's not analytics. That's making a decision. But yet when we get upset with a move we don't like, we like to blame the geeks. I mean, right. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't. Like in those two cases, I don't think it was.
I don't think it was either. Maybe that was something, a conversation that he had personally with Gregory Soto about the situation or how he was feeling or whatever it may be. We're also, I mean, the same thing with Brooks Raley. Like, why hasn't Brooks pitched since 4 days ago?
I am concerned, and we'll listen to Mendy later. Keep us updated, Sean. I'm concerned he's hurt, if you ask me.
Right.
And sometimes we don't hear about injuries until we have to hear about injuries.
Right. Even though your intuition, like with Goldie, with Sean, tells you something might be a little awry here.
You're right. Let's go to Evan in New Rochelle. Hey, Evan. What's up, Evan?
Hey, guys.
What's happening?
Hey, guys. How's it going? So, Evan, I just wanted to say I really, really liked your point the other day about, A-Rod as a, possible Yankees manager. I the more time I've had to sit with it, I don't know. I think he has a, it would certainly give the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, I think, a little bit of a much-needed boost, a little bit of an edge, but... I think it was, and I love Aaron Boone. I'm maybe at times a little bit too optimistic about stuff in Yankee land, but I don't know. I thought it was an interesting point you made.
I appreciate it. It's one of those points where people won't hear it. They'll just hear, oh, that's crazy. He's A-Rod. How could that ever happen? Mm-hmm. It probably will never happen right. Because the Yankees don't like Alex Rodriguez. But I see a man who lives and breathes baseball. And I see a man who's all the attention that he would probably get would probably actually help a team because all the attention would be on him and not on the day-to-day of a baseball team.
Yeah. There's certain guys that you just know are like that. Bryce Harper feels like he's one of those guys, too, that just loves the game and wants to be around it his entire life. So you could see him potentially getting into it at some point. But Alex, here's the thing with Alex that I appreciate. He's on a constant grind to reinvent himself.
Well, this would be a reinventing take.
I know, but just think about like everything that he's done and is trying to do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he tried to buy the Mets, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
And then he went and got and bought the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, who knows if he actually wants to be a manager or be on the side of baseball, but it wouldn't surprise me, right? It's like, why not?
Yeah, I think
if the opportunity presents itself. Don't say, oh, no, that's not me. Just say, why not?
Yeah, the why not is that the Yankees would never do it.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about the Yankees. I'm just talking about
in general. Like, if the Marlins called him up,
right.
I mean, and said, you know what? This will sell some tickets. South Florida.
Absolutely it would.
It would work. I got an email to the Rico B account, but it's related to this conversation, saying the guy who makes the most sense, and it would cause weirdness because he's probably going to get in the Hall of Fame with a Met hat on, is Carlos Beltran. Because Carlos Beltran was hired to be a manager. And I remember a lot of us being intrigued by it. Brian Cashman loves Carlos Beltran, right. Has sworn by him.
And the Astros thing screwed it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, he got fired. He got fired before he ever managed the game.
Completely unfair, too.
Completely. The guy got screwed.
Yeah.
The guy got hosed. And we will never know, because I don't think he'll ever manage, if I had to predict. We'll never know if it was going to work or not.
Mm-hmm.
I was very intrigued by it when they hired him.
But that's past, right? That's past him.
Yes. Oh, no. He could be hired tomorrow. The question is, there's twofold with Carlos. Is a team going to offer him the job? The Mets did. Will anyone else do it? And then B, is Carlos still willing to do it? It's been five years.
Did it come out of nowhere from the Mets? Like, I don't remember the buildup to Carlos being offered the job.
Here's how it came out of nowhere, and it didn't come out of nowhere. He started working with Brian Cashman. Like, he was working in the Yankee front office. And I don't know if you remember the comment Alex Cora made before the London series that the Yankees played in 2019, where, and this is before the scandal came out, Cora's like, yeah, you know, the Yankees know a lot more now with Carlos being there.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that whole thing?
Yeah, I do remember that now.
I do, yes.
So he was in the Yankee front office. Cashman loved him. I think he interviewed for the Boone job. He didn't get it.
Right.
Didn't he interview for the Boone
job?
That
sounds right, now that you're saying this.
And that's right after playing.
Right.
Like, he was retired after 17, so... I think he retired right after 17. The timing of this, I'm trying to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
So the Yankees were the first team intrigued by him. And now the Mets are obviously looking for a manager. At the time, we all wanted Joe Girardi. The Mets didn't hire Joe Girardi. He went to the Phillies, or eventually went to the Phillies. and they hired Beltran. So it sort of came out of nowhere, but he was working in a front office.
But either way, it was a fast track.
Yeah. Oh, very much a fast track. Very much so.
Yeah, he did interview, they hired Boone, and he did retire in 17.
Yeah. So he was up for the Yankee job right after being an active player and cheating against the Yankees.
He got hired as the special advisor to Brian Cashman.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if he's still interested in it. Why tomorrow night's game between the New York Jets and the New York Giants is completely unfair. I'll explain my big issue with this coming up, plus more of your calls on the Mets, the Yankees, mix in some preseason football as well at 888-808-1019.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.